Thanks for tuning in for another edition of the Talking Puck Podcast. Tom Callahan here with you, and I'll be joined by Mike Haynes in just a moment. This is not the same breakdown we did on Sunday night's Talking Puck TV. If you missed that episode, by the way, it's archived on Twitch, it's archived on YouTube. Feel free to go back and give that a spin for yourself. No, there's so many layers in a series like this, and both Mike and I agree that this is probably the best possible matchup we could have gotten for a Stanley Cup final. Great storylines, a lot of drama, two very powerful teams with incredible superstars. Both have questions coming in. We're going to kind of get into the questions that face both of these teams heading into this matchup. That's what we're going to really look at. We've got our own burning questions that we want to look at. And just starting with the age-old, you know, rest versus keeping it rolling. And so that's where we're going to tee things up here. Also, stay tuned to the end. Fun little nugget about what one business in the city of Winnipeg is trying to do to get Barry Trotz to come back home, so to speak, and coach there. All right, the Talking Puck Podcast starts right now. Hello, everyone. Welcome once again to the Talking Puck Podcast. I'm Tom Callahan, joined by Mike Haynes. I'm at Callahan on air on Twitter. He is at BusterTheDog33. And Mike, we have ourselves a Stanley Cup final that's coming up. We've done our preview. And for those who may have missed our Sunday night show, we kind of got into the weeds a little bit on things, talking about matchups and whether it's, you know, Colorado, what part of their team versus what part of Tampa Bay. I don't want to do that with this podcast. I want to do something a little different here. And this is a big question, Mike, that I think we need to lead off with. And then I have a few nuggets at the end. Here's a tease that I wanted to drop about how Winnipeg is trying to lure Barry Trotz, or more specifically, a Winnipeg business. Stay tuned for that one at the end. But okay. Here's, Mike, this is the biggest question, and this is not just an NHL question. This is a sports question, minor league, major league, any level. Is it better to have played recently, carry your momentum over, played a little bit more, a la the Tampa Bay Lightning, going six against the Rangers, limited time off, still some time off? Or is it better with Colorado sitting, resting, possibly getting Cogliano, possibly getting Kadri back, and probably not for game one at this point, you know, but having the chance to not have to try to rush those guys back in. We know that if a guy has his arm sewn on with dental floss, he will try to go out and play in the Stanley Cup. That's just how it is. But which is better? And so those are all parts of the factors. What do you like better as a team? And let's take it from each team's basis. Let's start with Colorado. They've been resting for a long time. Build the case for me, the good and the bad for the Avalanche.
Well, let me just compare it, because we've seen this already with Tampa, and I'll get to Colorado, but I just think about Tampa, and they went through this. And I remember talking after the four-game sweep of Florida, how this was fantastic for Tampa Bay. This is a team, a little bit older team, at least a team that has had a lot of miles on it the last 3 years. And we thought, wow, what a break. What a break for a goalie that you use a lot, for a team that has played a lot of games, to get that opportunity to face the Rangers, who had to go through seven games, win on the road, and that's after another seven-game series. You thought, what an advantage for Tampa Bay. And then the Rangers win the first two games against Tampa Bay. So you think, okay. And then I look, you know, so far, I think for me, for Colorado, that is a team that does not have the experience yet of playing it to this point. That core group has not won anything yet, and they, in fact, hadn't gotten past the second round until this year. They coasted in this playoffs. They cruised against Nashville, who didn't put up a fight at all. St. Louis barely put up a fight, and then Edmonton put up no fight at all. And so they have cruised. They have not been tested. I think that goes against them. Whereas Tampa Bay knows whatever situation they've been in every situation, Tom. They've been in short periods of time where they didn't have rest. They've had times where they've had rest. I just think experience lends itself to knowing how to deal with this. I think it goes against Colorado in terms of knowing how to deal with this. Other than the injury situation, you mentioned Cogliano and also Kadri, but also the Kemper, the goaltender Kemper, yeah. situation is big in terms of how that is. I just think when you are chomping at the bit to get to the Stanley Cup Finals like they are, I just think it's hard to wait. I think it's hard in a sense. I want to say the advantage goes to Tampa Bay in this, but I thought that for the conference finals against the Rangers. So could be wrong on this, but the one thing they do have is they are starting at home. They were phenomenal all year on home ice. The elevation there is a key, playing at that Mile High. And they've been home. They've been practicing at that level. That advantage goes to them. But I just think when you haven't been through this, I think it's a complete unknown as to how you can then deal with it. Whereas I think if Tampa Bay had this long rest, they deal with it a lot better being a veteran team.
Yeah, and, you know, so I'll start on the Colorado side. The altitude is obviously a difference. And as I said on the show Sunday, man, I would have traveled in as soon as possible if I were Tampa mm-hmm. Bay to begin my adjustment period.
Right.
I have seen teams sit around. I've been on teams that have sat around, especially before going into a final. I'll never forget this. I was with a team that was so good, did very much what Colorado did, kind of swept its way through the first couple of rounds,
mm-hmm.
and then sat 9 days, Mike, before starting the final for the Colonial Cup, which was back in the United Hockey League. It took mm-hmm. them 2 games to get going, and we mm-hmm. were down in an 0-2 hole. And there are people out there who are probably saying, Tom, how can it take professional hockey players at any level 2 games to get going? The first one, you're kind of out there skating around like a baby on cold medicine. If you're not ready, you're just kind of like everything doesn't quite work right. You're not really ready. It's just, you know, it's almost like being in a stupor. And the game, it's hard to explain, Mike, but unless you've even played at whatever level, any sport, you understand there's no way to simulate a game. Hmm. You could practice as hard as you want. You cannot simulate, and especially ratchet that up times 1,000 for a playoff game, and then add another factor of 10 for the Stanley Cup.
Mm-hmm.
That is the intensity you're going to come out there with. Now, look, these guys are the elite of the elite. They will come out both sides like they're shot out of a cannon, or should. And so for Colorado, healing the bumps and bruises, and for Kemper, if it means he's able to be healthy and see, I think the time off is great for him, because let's face it, look, the goaltending edge goes to Tampa Bay either way, but I think Kemper is the better of the options for Colorado. And if he's able to go, here's the thing, though. He's been sitting, too.
Goaltender,
right. Yeah. Goaltenders, to stay sharp, yeah. I think, need to see that quality of action, too.
Thank you for saying that. I was just going to make the point that players, I think, adjust quicker to a lengthy time off than goalies do. Goalies have to play. I talked to enough goalies about this. That's goalies more than skaters, I think. It's need that playing often situation. I really do. That's I always admire those guys who are the backup goaltenders who don't play a lot. That's a tough job. You're sitting on the bench. You're practicing, you're doing all that, and then you got to go in and play when one guy, you know, is playing 60, 65 games and you're playing 15. Those are spread out through the year. That's a tough job. But, you know, as you said, Kemper not only has had the break since the end of the Edmonton series, he left in game one of Edmonton. So he's been out even. He hasn't played a game even that much longer. And we don't know. He was on the bench. He backed up game 4 So if you're the coach, now you and I have had this discussion before about what do you, we talked about this with the Pittsburgh situation. Do you, is Kemper just the guy? He's number one. Whereas, you know, his backup came in and won four straight games. Do you now take him out and put Kemper back in, who hasn't played? And you're, I mean, who deserves that shot in a Stanley Cup? If you're the coach, you're thinking is it, this is not a time for feelings. This is a time for who is going to win me the game.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
And here's the other thing too, on top of all of this that we're plopping on there. Mm-hmm. Now you have a 2-day break too until you get to game two. So if you have a clunker in game one, either side, if either side has a clunker in game one, they have a lot more time to sit on it and it festers. Now there can be that time for questioning and all of that to kind of creep in. So for Colorado, I think it is the most important thing to get that lineup card right. Jared Bednar is under a lot of pressure to make sure the Avalanche launch correctly at home in game one. Don't blow home ice. The Avs, I mean, is it too early to say game one is must win for the Avalanche in this series? And it's going to be the hardest game for them to win, honestly. They could come back and win game two. They get a split on home ice, but that's not what they want. You don't want to head back to Tampa at 1-1.
No. Although, they have not lost a road game in the playoffs. Again, go back to the fact that they have not played great teams. But it's still a fact.
Edmonton's a hard building to win in.
Yeah. And they, you know, they didn't lose there. They didn't lose in St. Louis, and they didn't lose in Nashville.
Yeah.
And they didn't lose in Nashville. Another hard building there.
Yeah. So, okay.
So they're, to the credit for them, they have not lost on the road during the playoffs. Both teams, Tom, if my math is right, tell me if I'm wrong here. I think both teams have won five games in a row. Right? They've won, both have won five games in a row. So you have that. Now, both teams have rolled, you know, coming into this. So, this is, I'm with you. I think this game one is huge. If Colorado comes out and they look like they haven't missed a beat, that the rest was actually good for them, that might make it very difficult on Tampa Bay. But if Tampa Bay can use that veteran experience, pounce on them early. And the other thing is, they've got to, Vasilevsky's going to have to be even better. I mean, you thought initially, well, Florida's a higher scoring team than Colorado. And they were able to shut them down. So whatever they did against Florida, they're going to have to find that recipe again, aren't they?
Yeah, and you know what, Mike? Vasilevsky, as we kind of switch to the Tampa side, looked dominant winning those last four against the Rangers, right? So the Rangers came out, but the Rangers solved him in game one. Six goals in game one. Right. And look back at the Toronto series. There were times the Leafs made him look mortal.
Right.
So, and the Leafs have scorers and dynamic players. The Rangers have scorers and dynamic players. And guess what? The Avalanche have scorers and dynamic players.
Yes.
The key is doing it on a consistent basis. And one of the most admirable things about the mental toughness of Andrei Vasilevsky is his bounce back ability. He lost back to back games in the playoffs for the first time in, I know we talked about, what was it, like
19 games?
19 games.
Yeah.
When he lost game one and two to the Rangers. Unbelievable stat.
It is mind boggling, really, if you think about it. It really is. When you watched him, especially in those last games, they won four games. The last four games, he gave up a total of five goals. Did he look tired? Did he look worn out at all to you, or did he look sharp?
You know what fools you a little bit about Vasilevsky? And this is where I think his critics miss the mark on him, and this is me just talking as a goaltender, is there are times you watch him and you think, man, he's not moving much. He's not doing a lot. And then he does like acrobatic, you know, post to post, split, fling the pad out, get it with the absolute toe of his blade. But that's what he is. He's economy of movement and he's very good at it. He's very positionally sound. And that's what I like about his game. He, a lot of times, doesn't look like he has to work too hard to make saves because he doesn't. he is that good technically that he makes it look not even easy, but boring. And so we think to ourselves, well, he just looks slow. He's not slow. He is not lack of energy. But I can see where you can look at his game at times and think that about him, where he's slowing down a little. That's not it. He is just elite technically in the position. And then we get lulled into this, well, he's not moving, he's not doing this. Yeah, he made one or two acrobatic saves, but that is what he does. He has the energy and the push to make the acrobatic saves because of the way he plays and maintains his game. So I've really liked what I've seen out of him. When he's getting beat, though, it's rarely without a tip, a screen, a deflection, some kind of, you know, banking in off a shin pad type of thing. He's able to take care of what he's seeing, but traffic changes the equation. The Rangers, and on the power play, you know, not, I don't care how good you are, sometimes lateral movement, you're just not going to catch up to a fast pass in a one-time shot. If it's well-placed, you're just not going to get there. So that is what I think Colorado needs to do. Once they're in the offensive zone, they need to stop with the north-south and convert it to east-west. They need to get him going post-to-post. They need to get movement, and they need to get bodies in front of that net. But I have not seen a sign from Vasilevsky that shows me he's slowing down, that shows me he's not sharp. Coming into the playoffs, Marty Baron, Sabres analyst in NHL Network and SiriusXM, you hear Marty all over the place, said he didn't see Vasilevsky as sharp down the stretch of the regular season, the home stretch. And I would agree with that. And in the Toronto series, the first couple games, I'm like, oh, geez, maybe he's not going to pick it up. But since then, Mike, he has really dialed himself in. And I think he really dialed himself in that second series against Florida. That's where playoff Andre has returned. And I think that right now, looking at him, he doesn't look tired. He looks focused. And that's scary for the Avs.
Well, two parts then to what I want to talk about. I want to get your thoughts on whether Tampa Bay still looks hungry. Because I just thought before the season started, there's no way that I just didn't think it was possible in this day and age to keep that hunger going. So whether it is the players themselves or whether Cooper, their coach, gets a lot of credit for keeping the whip going or what, however he's motivating these guys, I'd like to hear your opinion on that. But first, just to finish up with Vasilevsky, my son and I were going through the height weights of goaltenders. In fact, we were looking at the, in the hockey news, they come out with that prospect issue, every year. And it recently came out and we were looking at different goaltender prospects and they were going, great goaltender, does all this, but only 6'1". You know, and so they had this, the whole, you know, that was the detriment. But when you look at Vasilevsky's height, weight, Tom, he's one of those goalies. And this is what I wanted to ask you. It's so funny to me how some goalies in their pads look so much bigger than they actually are. Vasilevsky is, because you would think he's a 6'4", 6'5" guy. He's not. He's not as big as you think he is. But why does he seem like he's big? Why do you think of, don't you think of Vasilevsky as a big, as a Robin Leonard, Ben Bishop goaltender? Or maybe you don't think that way. I did. But when you look at his height and stuff, he is not that tall. He just seems big to me when he plays, though.
He does. I was going to say, what the Garth Snow are you talking about? Remember, Snow had those giant lacrosse shoulder pads. Right. Man, that was the
and leg pads too were right. So wide.
Yeah. And there for a while, I mean, guys were using these crazy long, you know, leg pads that when you butterfly down would cross over and close up the five hole entirely. And so, you know, the league has closed a lot of those loopholes. Mm-hmm. But Vasilevsky plays tall, and so this is a great point. And actually, it's funny. So Carter Hutton just retired, and happy trails to Carter Hutton. He came to Nashville from Chicago when I was there and started working with Mitch Korn. And I think Mitch extended his career, and Carter owes Mitch a lot of thanks. Because when Hutton came to Nashville, he had still the potential. He was in his probably mid to late 20s. But what he didn't have was what Vasilevskiy has, and this is why I'm telling the story, is a very solid core. And I literally mean the abdominal and back muscles. When Hutton came in, Mitch worked with him over and over and over, to the point where I'm sure Hutton got sick of it, of working while holding a medicine ball and going through his movements, butterfly, shuffling, moving, skating, holding a medicine ball and trying to strengthen his core and getting him. So now, and Vasilevskiy is a guy who, and Hutton learned to do this while he was in Nashville, but that core, you have to hold yourself upright. His shooters can pick top corners. And Vasilevskiy even starts his stance. You ever watch him on the faceoffs, Mike? His stick's not even really on the ice. Just the point of the toe of the stick is on the ice, and his gloves are up in the air. And Vasilevskiy starts tall. So you can tell in his mind he sets up tall. He thinks tall. He plays tall. And he has a strong core. He keeps his body underneath him. His balance is centered. And so he's able to push and move and stay straight up while maintaining his strength of his stance and maintaining his posture. That is a big strength of Andrei Vasilevskiy. It's why he does look so darn tall. Yeah, if you had asked me, I would have said he was 6'5". I honestly don't know how tall he is. But he plays tall. And you're right, I do think he's a tall goaltender because of the way he plays. But that is, he even sets up that way. You can tell that's in his routine, to be big, to be vertical as well as horizontal. So, yeah, I easily could see, and I'm not surprised to hear you tell me that he's not a 6'5 guy, but, man, I would have thought that. Sure.
No, he's smaller. He's a lot smaller than you think.
Quote, unquote, smaller. Goalies
right,
used
I
to
know.
Be 5'8", not
I,
anymore.
I know. Right, which makes Soros in Nashville that much more special.
Yeah.
If he's listed at 5'11", you know he's 5'9 and a half. So.
Right.
So anyway, we were going through stats and we were just going, you know what? I would have bet that he was in the Ben Bishop, Robin Leonard category, but he's not. All right, back to what I had originally asked and wanted your opinion on. Does Tampa Bay, my thought was it was going to be impossible at the start of the season for a team to go in this day and age to go to the Stanley Cup 3 years in a row. But are you getting a sense that this is now a hungry team and now they've reached the finals? That hunger is still there for them? Do you see it when you saw them play, especially against the Rangers?
And I do want to hearken back to this. And look, Kucherov is probably the most impactful player when he's on, but he's mercurial. He's up and down. There are times when he just looks detached and isn't in there. And if he's not having a good game, he kind of pulls the chute. Luckily, he's on a much more talented team around him, too, that they can survive that at times. But you know who's motivated and who really wants this more than anybody I've seen in a long time is Stamkos. Exactly. That guy is the heart and soul of this Lightning team. He's been the captain for, what, is 8 years now, I think. He has this drive, and I think in a way, Mike, we talked about this on Sunday. Remember, he had that magical moment where he returned from injury and then broke down the ice, hurt himself in the process of scoring a goal, but scored a goal on his only shot and then left and didn't appear again. But in a way, players feel robbed of an experience that way. And I think that is, even if Stamkos won't say it, that is motivation big time for him. Because he was not as much a part of that as he wanted to be. And so I think for Stamkos, and he's playing well, and he's not only is he playing well, he's one of the best players on the team again. And they may get Braden Point back. I don't know how quick Point will catch up, but he's certainly a talented and very gifted player. He'll be an impact guy. But man, Stamkos is all the desire they need. And Hedman's plugged in. Hedman looks good, but we haven't had to talk a lot about Victor Hedman in the series previous, and I think that that's good. That means that Hedman is quietly doing his job and the defense is quietly doing their job, and we're not talking a lot about them. I think that's great for Tampa Bay. The less we talk about their defense, the better, because it means they're focused on their offense. And of course, you know, they're getting the saves when they need them. What better defense do you need than a goaltender who's all but impregnable?
Right. That is more so to me, and I did bring this up on Sunday, so I'm glad that you brought it up again. It's that age-old hockey question, rest versus routine, which Tampa Bay is in a routine. They've after their sweep, I liked your point, they got their rest. They got their rest before they had to go on to the conference finals. And then tough series against the Rangers. They were very fortunate they didn't have to go back for game 7.
Yes.
I don't know. To go back to Madison Square Garden, that might have been tough. But anyway, so it's that rest versus we're rolling, we're playing, we're in a routine. So, but more so than that, I've been thinking about this. What is the big question? I think it is also the hunger to win. Is it a team that has won 2 and just loves it and knows how to win? And do they still have enough hunger versus the team that has not won at all? They don't have anybody that knows how to win, but they have been trying so hard for years to get to this point. Is their hunger to win, having not won at all, more than the team? Well, we've won it before. You know what I'm saying? Which team is more hungry to win?
No one is satisfied losing, but from the Colorado standpoint, you have taken another step and gotten further than you have before, and there is satisfaction to that. And you look at Cale Makar, and I was at the Frozen Four in Buffalo with Makar. UMass lost a heartbreaker, and you know Makar was upset, but he was on to the Avalanche within a couple of days to join that team and start his professional career. But he didn't win. You know, and you look at pretty much everybody else on that team, as you say, there's not a lot. Like Nathan MacKinnon is an incredible player, and again, I threw the gauntlet at him in this playoffs and said, "You want to join the category of being in the question of the league's elite, you know, you need to step up and lead," and he has. You know, and they have a good cast. I wonder if they get down in this series, if they get behind at all, and they say, you know what, guys, we took another step this year, which is a dangerous thing because then you're all but admitting you're out. But and it's human nature. You know, you think of these things. You're never going to mutter it out loud, but you think of these things. How far have we gone? What have we done? Have we grown? What have we achieved? You think of these things all the time. What are we going to do for game 2? What are we going to do? It's all part of your thought process. I could see, as much as Colorado wants to win, in a way, they still believe in their future, if you will. Tampa Bay, every year, has the threat of this is it. So as far as the motivational factor goes, I think Tampa Bay is far more has a fire lit under them by the this is it factor under that Lightning team, because is 3 it? Could they go for 4? We're not there right now. Can they even keep the team together? We're not there right now. But boy, we're in the final now. I think that the absolute fire is lit under the Lightning to close this series out and win their third. I think that factor is clearly a checkmark in their box.
So you don't think, I like the way you're looking at it. That's the positive way for them. But if they fall behind in the series, do they go, well, we've won 2 in a row?
No.
You know, we're fortunate to get here. You know, you don't see that at all with this team.
They do say we've won 2 in a row, but then they say that's exactly why we're going to win 3, even if they're down 0-2 heading to Tampa Bay.
Okay.
I don't think they're that team. And again, I don't think Stamkos is that player. I don't think Hedman is that player. The only guy on that team that is that player is Kucherov. But again, be thankful for this, that he is not your only star, because other guys around him can say, all right, Cooch, you can pout for 2 games if you want. We're still going to pick it up. We need you. We would like you to not pout. But if you do pout, we will still be able to roll without you.
Yeah. And if he's not pouting, if he is engaged, look out.
Yes.
Because he is their most talented player, you know, skater. And when he is on, when he is at his, when he is engaged and he is into it and he is playing, he's the best. He's the best on that team.
Yeah.
That's a good question for you. If I don't know if you agree with me, I think he's their best. I'm not saying I agree with you what Stamkos is doing right now. He's got something to prove, and he's on a mission for sure. But talent wise, Kucherov's their best player. Is he better than anything that Colorado has? Does Colorado have like who has the best player in this series? We know who the best goalie is. That's not even a debate. That's not a debate. But player, who's the best player in this playoffs?
Pound for pound, if I could pick anybody off of either roster to start my next team, I'm picking Nathan MacKinnon. That's probably why I'm so hard on Nathan MacKinnon, is because I think he is one of the best players in the league. And I think that he has the ability to do so much more, to challenge so much more, and to lead that team. Does he have the supporting cast of Kucherov, and especially if Point is healthy? You know, that is almost an all-star game roster on the Tampa Bay side. You know, cap questions not accepted, but they'll have to face that judgment at some point here. But man, I think MacKinnon is the best player, both ends of the ice, ability, skill level. You know, I think he's the guy for me who could dominate and dictate the series if he is at his 100% level.
And yeah, so that's a guy, then, you know, every time he's on the ice, Hedman's going to be on the ice.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So is Hedman the kind, we know what he is. Is he the type of defenseman? Because we talked about Makar against McDavid, and that was just a great skater against a great skater. You know, you can't just think, I'm going to get physical on McDavid. He'll embarrass you.
Yes.
If that's what you're doing. Right. Yeah. I mean, if you're Scott Stevens and you're trying to just he'll make you look silly. So is Hedman a good enough defense? Is he the right kind of a defenseman? Probably is a better way to put it against a MacKinnon to negate him.
You know what? I actually like that matchup as much as I liked Makar McDavid for different reasons. Makar McDavid was skill versus skill. I think that looking at Hedman, he's a smart player. He's a physical player. He also has an offensive side, which I don't think he gets quite enough credit for, but that's not going to be the focus here against Nathan MacKinnon. And MacKinnon is a bigger guy. He can play physical. He can be hard on his edges. Can drive the net. He carries not only that speed but that power in his style, and so I think that this is again strength versus strength. Not that both guys aren't skilled, they are, but it's a little bit more of a power matchup too. It's a strength battle. It's a wits battle, and I can't wait to actually see that matchup too, because I think it's going to be a good one, and honestly, could be a key to the series. You know, you're probably looking at what a Makar on Kucherov for most of things. And I'm actually not as interested in that one as I was last series when it was Connor McDavid. Nathan MacKinnon against Victor Hedman now as a one-on-one matchup, I think is brilliant. And honestly, I think that both of them play into each other's hands in interesting ways, like that they both, again, it could almost come down to willpower between those two, especially in one-on-one battles. I would love to see this happen, and we will. I'm excited for it.
Now, the one thing, again, having the home ice, you do get that last change.
Right.
And so that's your advantage there is putting in, if Hedman's not out for a face-off, here comes McKinnon, you know,
right?
watch that matchup. You know, that's what they want. They got to get McKinnon out there when Edmonds not out there. So if you're Bednar, that's what you got to be doing. I know you wanted to do some burning questions here. I know I've got some for both teams. Do you want to start, or I can start with my burning questions? What do you want to do?
Time for a quick break, then back with more of the Talking Puck Podcast in just a moment. You know, here at Talking Puck, we generate a lot of media on different platforms. Open Media's 4K download suite makes my life a lot easier, and it can help you too. Whether you need to download audio clips, convert streams to audio, which we do a lot of here, creating slideshows, or even need help with your social media accounts like Instagram and TikTok, there's something for everyone, from casual user to pro. Use our special link, bit.ly/4kpuck. That's bit.ly/4kpuck to receive a special discount of 25% off your purchase. That's bit.ly/4kpuck. Talking Puck is now on Signal to Noise Radio every Monday night at 7 p.m. Eastern. Signal to Noise is one of the fastest growing internet radio stations, and now they have merch. Help spread the word about Signal to Noise Radio with t-shirts, stickers, keychains, and more. Shipping is direct and free. $25 gets you a t-shirt, while keychains and swag packs start at just $7. Order today at stnradio.com/merch. And thanks for your support. Now back to the show. We can start with Colorado. Three burning questions. Mike, we may overlap, and I'm sure we're going to overlap with my number one biggest all-time question for Colorado. Mm-hmm. Will the goaltending be enough?
Well, I think you put an addendum on that. Who will be the goal?
And who? Yeah, I mean Kemper. You know, starts game one, but again, he pulled himself because of blurred vision. And remember, he took that. Well, it was a stick in the eye, right?
Yeah, against St. Louis, yeah.
Right? And so, man, there's no way to actually know. Well, was there nerve damage? Nobody's going to tell you anything. But was there nerve damage? Right. Is it swelling that recurs for some reason? Like, you know, when the blood gets pumped. Whatever. We don't know what the problem is. Right. Was it something to the actual eyeball itself? So, man, that to me, that is the number one burning question.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And who will he be able to play? Now, he was on the bench for game four, and which leads me to believe you can't put him on that bench because you don't know whether at some point there's going to be an injury that he's got to go in or some reason he's got, you can't have him on the bench unless he's able to play. So my guess would be that he's able to play. And now he's had even that much more time. So I think we're going to see him. But you know what? He can get lit up. He can really be good. And he gets a lot of help in front of him. He doesn't have to face a lot of shots normally. But he, you would not consider him an elite goaltender, but he's been good enough to get them, to help them get to this point and have a great regular season. But that I agree with you. That's the number one question: who starts and how good are they going to be against the Tampa Bay team? I mean, Tampa Bay is not they're not Florida, and they're not even necessarily Colorado or Edmonton, but they strike when they get the opportunities. It's not necessarily just a wave like Edmonton, Colorado, Florida. It just feels like it's just wave after wave of offense, doesn't it? Tampa Bay is much more balanced, and they strike when they get the opportunity. It's a different kind of offense, and sometimes that's almost harder for a goaltender. Have you found this? Sometimes when it's just coming at you, goaltenders get engaged, and this is great. Now, especially if you're making some saves, now you're in the game. Goaltenders almost, I've talked to enough goaltenders to feel like, give me some shots, give me some, you know, get me into this game. But when Tampa Bay, and tell me if you disagree with me on this, but to me, this is tougher for a goaltender. It's not the wave after wave after wave. It's like, boom, all of a sudden they strike. It's a different way to deal with it as a goaltender. I think harder. Do you disagree with me on that?
No, because when your team is going up the ice and turns the puck over, you know, you're following your team up the ice. Some goaltenders, like I used to skate a little further out of the net when my team went up the ice. I liked movement. I know some guys just are homebodies, stay in their crease. I used to follow my team up the ice. Sometimes I go hang out at the hash marks just to keep myself moving and feel like I was doing something. But whatever it is, in your mind, you switch over to, all right, we're on the attack, here we go, turnover. Uh-oh. Now you're on the defensive again. And the thing about turnovers and transition play and why coaches harp on them so much is because they are often odd man chances. They're often at, you know, a frantic speed going the other way, and mistakes happen more often on transition turnovers because the defenseman now is scrambling, who may have given the puck away, or the forward scrambling to get back. Like, there's a certain element of panic. That leads to defensemen doing things like not taking away the pass, which is the goalie you always want the shot. That leads to not covering that third guy who slips in because now the forward keys on something else, or that your defensive partner blew out of the zone and took off. And now it's even worse. It's a 3-on-1, not a 2-on-1. You know, it's things like that that add that element of panic that make it much tougher for a goaltender. And then in those situations, rebounds are huge. A lot of times, if you leave a rebound in a situation where your defense is set up, your guy is camped in front of the net battling, they can help you clear those rebounds.
Right.
That does not happen in transition. You know, it's rare that works out. And so, yes, it is way harder to stop a transition chance than a team gets into the offensive zone, forecheck, sets up, goes to work. Because then there's look, the element of control exists with every NHL team. I remember this when I first started calling NHL games, Mike. I actually was shocked at how much easier it was, despite how much faster it was, because the NHL is so regulated and so set the way they do things. Breakouts, dump-ins, cycle game, regroups, all very controlled. And maybe fans don't realize this. So there is that element to it, and that extends to the players as well. There is a certain level of execution that goes there. Now, when you turn the puck over and you just took the Etch-a-Sketch and shook it and blanked it out and said, whoop, there went that play. Now everybody's scrambling and there's nothing on the board to look at for a reference. You just have to read and react. And so, yeah, that's why those chances are so much more dangerous.
Yeah, and that's what I think of Tampa Bay, is that they're an opportune team. They take advantage of situations. They're not necessarily just going to just coming at you in waves, but boy, they get an opportunity. They know how to cash in on those things. That's how they've won a lot of games, I think. They just pounce when the opportunity's there. So
yeah.
Anyway, so that'll be interesting to see how he deals with that as a goaltender. So that's certainly a burning question. Then I also think, you know, it's an easy one to say, but the power play, when you look at the lineup for Colorado, is it's an all-star lineup in terms of the power play opportunities. And will they be able to, because you expect games, you know, you get these are not Cinderella teams. This is the best team from the West, best team from the East. I think deserved to be in the finals, and the games 5-on-5 will be very close. Is their power play good enough to make a difference in games? That's a burning question for me. Can they take advantage? And Tampa Bay does not necessarily take a lot of penalties. They're not that kind of team. So you're not going to get a tremendous amount of power plays, but can they use those power play opportunities to score and win?
And coming into the series, Colorado's power play in 14 games is 31.1%. So they're firing pretty good. Their penalty kill is not good. It's 75.7. So, but Tampa Bay's power play is it's 22.6.
Yeah,
you know, but so that Avs power play, yeah, that's a big key. And you know what? I'm actually gonna bump my third to my second burning question just so I can dovetail it in with this. It's coaching, and we talked about, you know, Bednar trying to get matchups and things like that when he's on home ice. But Bednar versus John Cooper, who has two Stanley Cups and has his team playing very well right now, But that's going to go into the special teams equation of being able to execute and score those goals at key times, because Mike, are we stretching it here, or am I overthinking this? As offensively powered as both of these teams can be, I don't think this is a 5-4 every game series. I think as gifted and as skilled as these teams are, I think we're talking 3-1, maybe a 4-2 with an empty netter, even with the Avalanche potential goaltending questions. So the special teams become so much more important. If Colorado takes a 2-1 game and makes it 2-2, or takes a 2-1 lead and makes it 3-1, that is a much different factor in this series. And I think that, yeah, that is a huge question for the Avalanche. Can that power play be as good as it's been? And look, the Oilers aren't known for defense. You know, I mean, they're just not. They didn't get the goaltending either. And we talked about this, to be fair, and St. Louis kind of had to shuffle between goaltenders. I think St. Louis was still the toughest test Colorado faced, and obviously they beat them twice. Those are the only two losses the Avs, the only two losses the Avs had. That's what I mean to say. Coming from, you know, St. Louis, which is a little bit more tougher team, Nashville was a speed bump. This is different for them facing this team. So confidence is going to be a big part of it too. When they come into the series against Tampa Bay, this is by far the most elite team they've faced in this run. And now I have to believe Colorado feels pretty good about itself in its special team. Don't you? I mean, I think their power play feels great about itself right now, the way they've been executing. There's no reason to think that you can't continue to do that systematically, but they need to. And so to my point on coaching, Tampa Bay is smart enough to adjust. Will Colorado then be able to counter? I want this to be a coaching chess match. I know that there are people out there who just rolled their eyes at me and said, Tom, you're a dork. That's fine. That's why I'll be that dork. I want to see the adjustments happen. I want to see the chess match between the coaches as much as anything else. How are you going to get the matchups you want even when you're on the road? How are you going to adjust to what the Avalanche do on the forecheck if they change it up, or on the power play if they work around your first PK look? How are you going to do that? I can't wait to see that, Mike. And I think that special teams is the magnifying glass on coaching. Which is why it bothers me when a lot of coaches go, well, I wasn't in charge of the power play. Dude, you're in charge of the team.
Right.
So to tell me your power play struggled, well, I don't run the power play. You're still the head coach. I hate that. Oh, man, I hate that. Galls me when people say that stuff. But anyway.
Well, Bednar has won a championship. He won at the American Hockey League level.
Right.
He won one. He did win a cup, Turner Cup.
Calder Cup, Mike, not the IHL.
Oh, my IHL. Oh, my goodness. I know. You know what? I was just so funny. I was just looking right up to the left there. I got a big picture of the Denver Grizzlies in the Turner Cup there.
Nice.
I don't know why Turner Cup went in my head. Anyway, so yeah, okay. So anyway, that was my burning question. All right. What
you want? So number three for me for Colorado's got to be McKinnon. Cam McKinnon really carry this. Yeah, I'm not even worried about Makar, and Makar is still young and learning, and I expect this to still be a learning experience for him, even though he plays at a very elite level. But man, McKinnon is the linchpin in this whole thing for me. My 1B to that, by the way, is Gabriel Landeskog, and we don't talk a whole lot about Landeskog because Landeskog has become more of a two-way player, and McKinnon gets all the press. Landeskog is an incredibly important part of this equation. There's a reason he's the captain. But man, I just think McKinnon has to be the straw that stirs the drink for Colorado. Otherwise, there's no way they win this series.
Well, remember, you know, I saw Landeskog from the very beginning when he first came in the league as a rookie. That, first of all, there was he got the captaincy. They had given it to Milan Hayduk, and Hayduk was the wrong guy to give it to. He was like, they had gutted the team. Hayduk was the last veteran left, but Hayduk is not a captain. That's not, he's well-liked. He's a nice enough guy, but he's not a captain. So he gave it up. And Landeskog, I think at the time, didn't he pass? I think he passed Crosby as the youngest captain in NHL history. He was, I think he passed Crosby. Anyway, he was right behind Crosby. Somebody has passed him now, but at the point, he was either number one or number two youngest captain in the league. So he was a captain for a lot of horrible teams. So he's really grown. The other thing about him is he had a horrific knee injury late in the season too. So, but he scores some goals because he's playing on that big line, but the offense, that's not his thing. But he is big. He's strong. He's a good leader. And he can come up with big plays. I agree with you. He can be a factor for sure. But he's still coming off he didn't play until right at the end of the season. He missed a lot of time. I would agree with you. As probably for Colorado, as McKinnon goes, they will go. If they are able to thwart him, shut him down, keep him off the scoreboard, I know him well enough that he will get frustrated. And that's not what you want out of a guy. So, but if he's rolling and he's got his speed going and he's got his power going, that could be a factor that lends itself to them winning everything. If he's the dominant, if he's by far the best player in the series, that gives them a very good chance to win.
I think that, boy, that's more than anything else what it's going to key on, because the Avalanche will take care of their net enough if they're scoring enough goals. You know, they'll do enough, but that is the big one. Do you have anything else for Colorado before we switch over to burning questions for Tampa?
No. I think those are the keys, really. Those are my burning questions, and I think it all begins with, is their goaltending going to be good enough? And just the added part to that is, you said they're going to they protect the net because they have to with their goaltender. They don't have an elite goaltender. Is it a Chicago situation where they're just good? They're so good defensively and score enough goals that, you know, that you can have Niemi playing goal and win a cup. That's certainly the case. I'd have to go back and analyze Chicago's opponents in the Stanley Cup if they had such a difference in Niemi or Crawford versus the goaltender they were playing against, because Vasilevsky's the best goalie in the NHL. This it's a wide margin. This is not, two decent goaltenders against each other. This is a decent goaltender against the best in the NHL.
Yeah,
that'll be a factor. It has to be a factor.
Yeah, I agree. And so to my burning questions for Tampa Bay, and this kind of ties in with health. I debated separating these and making just health a point on its own in a burning question, but I think it's important to ask because everybody's got bumps and bruises this time of year. However, the Avalanche are just a younger team. You know, the Lightning have played a lot of hockey, Mike. They've won the last two cups. Short summers, weird seasons too, right? Yeah, like we've had weird season lengths. We've had oddball rest periods. And that's never going to be an excuse that comes up. But the human body can only do so much for so long.
That's right.
So at what point does it become a factor for Tampa Bay in this cup final against the Avalanche? Do the Avalanche play hard enough against them to make it a factor? And of course, we've been told extremely likely we see Braden Point back. So he's going to come in at least rested, maybe not 100%. But some of these older guys, it does become a concern. Fatigue becomes a concern with a Stamkos, with a Kucherov, with even a Hedman who plays so many minutes, Mike, but hard minutes. You rely on your stars an awful lot. And again, coaching, John Cooper, how are you going to manage these minutes? But I have to think fatigue and health is a big question for me for Tampa Bay. No one's 100%, I get that. Do they have enough left in the tank?
That's it. I know. I'm still a little shocked that they're here. And that just tells you how great a team they are. in this day and age to keep that group together and to have that hunger to get to this point. At some point, you run out of gas and, you know, and injuries, but they have stayed fairly healthy. Point is the big key. They're not missing any big ingredients this year. And Vasilevskiy has, once again, stayed healthy. Because we kept saying all year, you know, if he goes down, that's it. So if, boy, oh boy, that could be, you just don't know when that switch turns off, when they just are done. That's a factor. But on the flip side, it is, there is something about, even when you're tired, even when you're, running out of gas, there is something about knowing how to win, isn't there, Tom?
Yes.
That is,
yes.
That's the thing. That is the biggest advantage they have, I think, is knowing how to win big games. They've done it enough.
You know, yeah,
they've done it now for three straight years. That's a huge factor for me. What else you got for burning questions?
So, defensively for Tampa Bay, this is a big one. And looking at shots against per game, this kind of jumped out at me, and I didn't expect this. And then the more I thought about it, it makes sense. Colorado allows the least shots per game in the playoffs, despite having played 14 games, and Tampa Bay has played 17 to this point. 28.2 shots per game allowed by Colorado shows you how much they insulate their net, how well they protect their goaltender. Tampa Bay is allowing 31.9, so almost 32. I know you're saying, Tom, that's basically a four-shot difference. That's important when it comes to your save percentage for your goaltender, when it comes to your rebound chances, those extra chances. Are those four dangerous chances? Are they four perimeter chances? The point is, it's still four more chances for the puck to go in the net. So I think Tampa Bay, which is basically mid-pack defensively, Mike, in the playoffs, looking at all the statistics, they need to be better than that. Defensively, Tampa Bay... I'll say this, as great as Vasilevskiy is, you can't have him have to bail you out to win four games. They can't do that against Colorado. They need Vasilevskiy to occasionally come up with a brilliant stop and then otherwise be solid. They need to be better defensively in their own zone. And again, I like to, you know, bring it back to coaching and the matchups and all of that stuff. But man, this is something that we really haven't focused much on Tampa Bay, because we do look so much at their offense. But defensively, are they going to be good enough to limit Colorado's chances? Can they, to your point, shut down MacKinnon and frustrate him? Because if they don't, as you said, if he gets rolling, man, look out.
Yep. The only thing I would counter with that is the opponents each team played against so far. Again, Colorado didn't play good teams compared to what Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay had to shut down the top scoring team in the NHL in Florida. They had to shut down a very potent offense in Toronto. Took them seven games to do it, but they won. And the Rangers are pretty good. They're a pretty good offensive team too. I think, to me, it's more impressive that what Tampa Bay did against their opponents. Again, Colorado didn't play good teams. So I just have to respectfully disagree with you on that. I just think it's apples and oranges to me. You know, I think Tampa Bay it's more impressive to me. They kept, you know, those shots to, you know, 32 against three really, really good offensive teams. I think their defense was, considering who they played, is fine. Now, statistically, Florida was better offensively than Colorado, and they were able to stop them. So I don't know. I don't see that as much as a factor as you. What do you think?
Well,
I said that.
Yeah, I mean, I can see what you're saying, especially the Nashville series. But Edmonton was a big offensive test for Colorado. There were a lot of weapons on that Oilers team. I think that I can kind of balance that out. St. Louis. Maybe is the midpoint of those teams, but man, and Edmonton's the most recent series that we have to go off of.
Yeah, but they gave up goals against Edmonton. They gave up six in the first game. They gave up five in the fourth game. You know, it wasn't like they just shut them down.
True.
The problem was they couldn't stop Colorado. You know, if Edmonton had any decent defense and an okay goaltender, they would have won that series. Colorado gave up goals. You know, it wasn't like they completely stopped them. So whereas Tampa Bay, you want to look at statistics. Florida's a better scoring team than Edmonton is. And Tampa Bay swept Florida. They shut them down. So I don't know. That's just my counter to what you're saying. That's all.
Yeah, no, that's totally fair.
Let me throw one out you.
Sure.
Let me give you a burning question and have you deal with this one. Which team? Now you have to think about this. You might just automatically think this. Which team? And my guess, if you want me to phrase it in a burning question, can Tampa Bay continue to score late goals to win games like they did against the Rangers? They won three out of those four games with third period goals, two of them coming in the last 2 minutes. Is that just walking too close to the cliff? Because those games could have gone either way.
So after a quick thought here, I'm going to say yes, and here's why. Those late game situations, both sides load the ice, right? The best of your best are out there. I think in total, Tampa Bay can put five players on the ice better than any five players Colorado can put on the ice. I'm not saying that McKinnon...
How about six players?
Well, really? Six players, yes.
Includes a goalie.
Yes. I think that the depth of Tampa Bay is better than the depth of Colorado. Again, we're wondering... And the two biggest burning injury questions are going to be Kadri and Point. What are they going to be able to contribute, if anything? Will they be there for game one, game two, game three? Where will they be the healthiest they're going to be? I don't think either one will ever be 100%. So, but the depth, to me, Colorado missing Kadri is way more important to them than Point being out for Tampa Bay, even though Point is that skilled of a player. And that says something about Tampa Bay's depth. I think Tampa Bay has the ability to look up and down the bench and feel just fine. Whereas Colorado, once you get past the midpoint of that roster, I don't know. Like, if you sustain an injury during a game and you have to miss a Taves or, you know, Makar, or, you know, even an equipment issue, whatever, and he's not out there for 30 seconds, like, that's a big 30 second. So, and you don't want to see that happen. You want to see those matchups, but I just think it's a much greater fall off as you go through the roster for Colorado than Tampa Bay.
Okay. My point is this, though, that Tampa Bay won some games by a razor thin margin with late goals. My burning question is, can you continue to do that and win? Because you suspect these games are going to be close.
Yes.
And if they are, did they run out their fortune, or is this, have they gone, we can do it. We have proved to ourselves we can win these games. That's my burning question, is have they used up their good luck, or do they still have, or is it just, this is their DNA. You get us down to the last 5 minutes of a tie game in the third period, we are going to win.
Yeah. I
don't know. You know what I mean?
I'm standing with that, Mike. I think that's who Tampa Bay is. I think that is... Through the roster, and it's the belief that they have in themselves. Yeah, I don't know that big game moments have anything to do with feeling tired. And I mean, you've been on teams that have won Stanley Cups, and you've seen guys step up and have incredible moments in those runs. Mm-hmm. And it's a couple of years ago. Remember the NHL ran that promo about the Stanley Cup? Guys lifting the Stanley Cup with broken shoulders and all that. It's like, but, you know, it weighs 38 pounds, but you lift it with your heart, was the tagline. And it just, I think that's true. Like you, yeah. That's who Tampa Bay is in their heart, in their soul. That's the way this team is built. I don't think, look, do I want to see, if I'm John Cooper, do I want to see my team living dangerously? No, but look, we both agree these are the two best teams in the NHL right now meeting for the final prize. Man, this is going to be a great series, so something's got to separate them.
Yeah, okay. That was that was my big burning question for them. And then the obvious ones, you know, do they have enough left in the tank? And how hungry are they to win even after they've won the last two? Is it just like, oh, we made it back again? Or is it, nah, man, we've done this. We love winning, and we want it again. So, and then that side note again, the question of playing at Mile High, does that make a difference? If they came in early, maybe they get a little acclimated. They're going to then have a couple extra days too in between games one and two to get used to it. But if they got to come back for a game five. Those are the tough ones. You've played two games sea level. Now you got to make that quick trip, and then you're playing at Mile High. You know that I'm telling you, I've lived here long enough. It could be a factor. Could be what's one of those burning questions. Will that make a difference?
And I think that
to an older team.
And I think that Mike magnifies even more what I said earlier about the importance of game one to the Avalanche. Everything you've just said underscores it. So, you know, Colorado, hey, well, you better be awake for game one, despite being off for 6.5 weeks. So I think that's a good way to put a wrap on it, put a bow on it, because I want to end this on kind of a light note. This is a fun little thing. If you're Barry Trotz, there are deciding factors into where you want to coach, right? The roster, you know, money, what you're going to get paid. Maybe there's some appeal to go closer to home in Winnipeg. Maybe there's some appeal to working in a particular region of the United States for quality of life or whatever, or an organization. But Mike, listen to this. A Winnipeg brewery says it will give Barry Trotz free beer for life if he returns to Manitoba to coach the Jets. Little Brown Jug Brewing Company, and they were on a local sports talk show, and they decided that they would give Trotzy free beer for life if he goes and coaches in Winnipeg. Now, I know Barry pretty well. Red wine is more the way to his heart, but that's an interesting, that's a fun little carrot to dangle out there. It's like, oh, yeah, free beer for life.
You know,
that might work for you or I. I don't know.
If I'm Vegas, I go, we are going to pay you so much money, you can buy your own brewery.
Nice.
Don't worry about it, Barry.
Nice. You can get him with Ryan Reeves, and although Reeves is with the Rangers now, he started a brewery in Vegas. So, you never know. It's he could have his own winery somewhere.
That,
I don't know.
We're going to pay you so much, you can open up your own red winery.
They could offer him his own brewery as part of the contract.
Right, I know. But believe me, I think he's going to Vegas.
Oh man, that is just such a.
I know.
Ooh, there's a lot going on in Vegas.
Yep.
There's a lot going on. But you know what? I mean, again, I don't think he's going to sit for a year. He could though, and get paid. But I think he'll go somewhere. Someone will throw a lot of money at him, and like you said, Vegas is probably one of those places. But yeah, free beer for life. That's an interesting carrot. And I will say this. Hey, Little Brown Jug, you guys did a great job getting your name out there by doing this.
I was going to say, that's some pretty good PR right there, for sure.
100%. 100%. So that until Mike and I open our own brewery and really get the something flowing that way. Well, Mike, maybe that's our second career. Maybe that's a... I as long as I can walk around, wear weird hats, and get that giant eyedropper they use to try to taste things out of the, you know, just to look cool, like I know what I'm doing, and I clearly won't.
Right.
And then you pretend. Then I know you, though. You'll pretend and fall in, and then it'll take us a long time to get you out.
Oh, so. My goodness. That sounds like...
Tom, you can't keep swimming away from us. Over here. Over this side.
Swim over to the life preserver.
We walk around to the other side of the big vat. Tom, back this way. This way. And we got to keep walking around trying to get you. I know how you are.
Oh, my goodness. That sounds like Strange Brew to me. Oh, absolutely. Well, that's kind of a fun note to end things on. But at the end of the day, Mike, I know we're both so excited for the Stanley Cup Final. I can't wait for it to kick off. This, to me, is going to be the best matchup we've seen in recent years. I hope it does not fail to live up to the hype, because I'm hyped.
Yeah, it certainly has that potential, but it has all the makings of a good one. The last two for Tampa Bay, they certainly had easier opponents to face. This will be a real test for them to try to win three in a row. And what a remarkable accomplishment if that happens. I mean, not since the Oilers in the mid-80s did it. It's remarkable. Not since we had the Islanders and followed with four in a row. Then we had the four in a row for Edmonton. And it's remarkable in this day and age with the salary cap, which didn't happen for those two teams, that you're able to even get there for three in a row. It really, when they're done, when this group is done, I mean, I thought a lot about the Chicago Blackhawks. They didn't win. They won three, but not in a row.
Right.
And you, if they win, if Tampa Bay wins this year, you have to at least have them in the conversation for best all-time teams, just because of what the circumstances are now. They have to be in that conversation, but that's still 4 to 7 games away. We got a lot more things to talk about, but congrats to them. It's a remarkable accomplishment for Colorado. They've been working so hard to overcome that hump to get to this point. And it's been a long time since 2001, since they've been there. So there's a lot of excitement for them too. So it all leads up to a start of what we hope is entertaining hockey.
Absolutely. So we appreciate everybody listening in and being a part of the podcast here. And if you like what you hear, please click like, follow, subscribe anywhere you get your podcasts. And don't forget, Mike and I are live every Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. We are on YouTube. We are on Twitch TV. And we are also on Facebook Live. Search for Talking Puck and you will find us there talking about hockey like we just did here. So for Mike, I'm Tom. And everybody, enjoy the finals. We will as well. And we will talk to you next time on the Talking Puck podcast.